Welcome to Studio G and the Welcome to Studio G and the discussions for women in leadership, where we focus on how the styles and principles of an Omega leader can influence leadership. We will be back with you shortly to start this week's show in just a few minutes. Good evening and welcome to Studio G and the discussions for women in leadership. We continue our focus this week on how the styles and the principles of Omega leaders can influence leadership. Here in the studio this week, we have everybody present. Nobody's traveling or in a plane or in a car trying to call in. We have Lori Beth Jones, speaker, author of 14 books, and the book leading our discussion, Jesus CEO. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you.
Representing the business pillar is Vicky Arteaga. Welcome, Vicky. Welcome back from Mexico today. We understand that you were doing some business on the other side of the
border. Yes, border. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great. And we have Elisa Holston representing the education pillar. Welcome, Elisa.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this week's show, we are going to open discussion on what it means to be an Omega leader around the concept of managing from the inside out. What on earth does that mean? Lori Beth is going to unpack that chapter for us in a few minutes, but I believe Vicky's going to tell us an awesome definition for what is an Omega leader.
An Omega leader is that particular style of just leadership that is very comprehensive, and it includes the alpha or authoritarian style of leadership, the beta or collaborative style of leadership, and it places a different dimension, a dimension that transcends both these first two, and it's applied at the right time, at the right place, with the right people.
Excellent. Thank
Good
you.
Good job.
A-plus.
A-plus.
Okay, goodbye.
The education pillar. Education pillar gives you a summative evaluation of A-plus.
Great. So, Lori Beth, this chapter on an Omega leader manages from the inside out. Tell us your thoughts as you were pinning those words of wisdom.
Well, I call it the sprinkler syndrome because I've often observed that the grass immediately around and underneath the sprinkler head is dead, and all the grass that gets the water is green. But you will, and I challenge listeners to look at sprinkler heads, and you will often see, unless it's a leaky sprinkler
head. Trust me, I'm going to check it out.
That the water goes out, and you know, it's like the plumber with the leaky faucet and the preacher's kid that has no attention. It's the shoemaker with the hole in the shoe. We put so much energy going to the outer circle that we don't look at nature. The ripple effect starts from when the stone falls in the water, then it goes from the inside out. And yet so many companies that I've observed and consulted with, and you can read about them every day, they put a lot of emphasis on PR and advertising, but they neglect those interior rings that are consequential and sequential and have consequences.
Hmm.
There's a lot of playing with that word there.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay up with you.
Yeah. So it's, you know, in the book, in Jesus CEO, I talk about consulting I did years ago at an osteopathic hospital that had 5,000 employees, and yet when they did a survey, 75% of the people didn't even know what osteopathic meant.
Wow.
And so part of what I did was go in and reinvigorate them around the tremendous tradition they had of A.T. Still and how he challenged allopathic medicine. And really, there's really two schools of thought in medicine today in the United States because of him. So it's just, it's so profound. And several weeks ago, I was consulting with a very large nonprofit, and they have spent, they've committed some multiple millions of dollars to doing a campaign around this new product that they're offering. And yet, when you go to the actual inner core of the organizations that are supposed to deliver the product, many of them had no input into it, and they also aren't going to carry it. So it was like you launched this great, some advertising agency, and I can speak because I was one, you know, came up with this brilliant idea, and so they're spending millions to sprinkle it out, but the people that are going to have to ultimately deliver it had no input into it and really are not aware of it, and so there's going to be a real lag time when it comes to people looking for this product and finding that it's not there. So now they've created a bigger mess, really, than they had of not knowing, because now they're going to create a false impression. And this happens all the time, big companies, little companies, families.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, they don't know what the kid's schedule is. The kid doesn't know where his dad is. It's just, you know, there's a lot of a lack of knowledge about our inner core that I think is not Christ-like in leadership.
It seems like such an obvious thing, and I'm the leader of a sizable school and over 50 staff and 700 kids, and it seems like such a no-duh kind of thing, but if I'm honest with myself, I think I myself am guilty of that, of putting more attention and focus on the outside, and maybe it's the tyranny of the urgent. I just learned how to pronounce that word tonight. Because it's just, maybe it's, I don't know if it's because of me being a fire or what it is, but it's that tyranny of the urgent that I'm so kind of single-minded in my focus of pursuing my mission, to my external clients, if you will, that I often neglect my internal clients. And I can probably say that they're not always up to speed, up to date, as connected with the mission and or sometimes the inner knowledge or decisions that are made. Why does that happen? It seems like such an obvious thing to be informing from the inside out, but yet I know that in my school I'm guilty of it, and I know even within the district I'm guilty of, I get frustrated with my leadership above me because I find things out a day late and a dollar short.
Who are your internal clients? Who would you say?
I'd say the internal clients would be primarily the teachers and the staff members, and the external clients then would be the students and their families.
Okay.
Looking at that kind of paradigm.
Well, speaking elementally, which I know you love to do, and you always ask challenging questions around that, the fires tend to assume that everybody in their immediate vicinity is already on board.
Oh, that's my problem.
And so since fires are quite often motivated by challenge and achievement and status, and I can speak to that being a fire myself, that we're always going for the higher bar, the furthest thing out, and we forget and neglect the people that are closest to us. I'm thinking of King David, who was off fighting battles, and meanwhile, somebody came and stole his wife and children and the camp, and he was out, you know, he was out conquering great things, and meanwhile had left unguarded his true treasure. So I think that really happens, and I want to focus for a second on the Bible, because I was having a theological discussion a week or two ago with somebody, and they were talking about evangelism and how important evangelism is and telling the story. And
right.
I said, you know, I really have to say that the Bible, until you get to the New Testament and even Acts, it's not evangelical. It is telling the story to the family.
Yes.
All of oral tradition was sitting around the campfire, and this is what happened with Abraham, and this is what happened with Moses. It is people telling the story to the family.
Yeah, it's discipleship.
Discipleship. And I think we have lost that art in leadership, that we want to tell the story to other people so we can get more numbers or new clients or new, bigger, better, whatever. And yet, I remember one company hired me and he just said, we're hiring you to tell us our story.
Wow.
You tell us our story.
That's a sad statement.
To us. It was a brilliant statement.
Right.
Yes, that was wisdom, because he knew that until they understood who they were as a people, they could not go forth and make great conquests. And when you look at leaders in Scripture, whenever they called people to great challenge and change, they reminded them of who they were and whose they were.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to make this leap because we are God's chosen people. God has helped us in the past. This is our story. Remember when God led us, you know, part of the sea. Remember, it's the ingrained self-knowledge and awareness of who you are that leads you either to be victorious in taking the promised land or to be squashed like a grasshopper.
Mm.
So telling the story and the internal management is often telling the story by saying, this is how we do things around here. This is how you encode and enforce a culture, by telling a story about what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, how we do things. So it's just a core principle. The core principle, really, of Jesus CEO is he managed from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
He poured everything into his small team.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he had parties, and yes, he fed the thousands, and yes, and where were they when times
mm-hmm.
got tough? He never counted on them to be anything more than people in need.
Mm-hmm.
But he poured his lifeblood into his small staff.
Yeah.
And that's the Omega leadership principle in a nutshell.
It's powerful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really powerful, as you mentioned, because I totally agree the difference between evangelism and discipleship is the depth of the story that you're telling, is the depth, is the audience, is the investment on the people and the time that you invest, the mentoring and all that, that is going to transcend to the next ripple, the next circle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, leadership is something that you can tell when an organization has a good leadership because of the way the employees behave and all that.
Right.
You can see that. It's a reflect of the top leader.
Mm-hmm.
I got
mm-hmm.
a question. An organization, whether for profit or non-profit, not for profit, that doesn't manage from the inside out, what does that look like?
Turnover, churn, dissatisfaction, energy leaks, underutilization of skill sets and power. It's, you know, to use a car analogy, it's a Porsche running on two cylinders when it has, what, eight
mm-hmm.
more? So it's a loss. It's a tremendous loss of not looking at your people. I was in an organization several weeks ago, and the receptionist there has always struck me as just being extremely bright. And I saw her at a company function, and we had some time to visit. And this woman is off the charts intelligent. And so I talked to the CEO, and I said, have you thought about her for events and representing the company? And he thought a minute. He said, well, you know, she was almost an attorney, and she had kids, and she stepped back. And he said, no. He said, I just see her as the receptionist. I said, you've got a racehorse standing in a plow right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it takes an outsider to help.
To bring the
eye, because then we get in our ruts and we see people in terms of their job description.
Exactly.
And not the understanding that they're going to be cross-functional and that they might be called to do other things.
Mm-hmm. To close and, you know, you're used to.
A little bit like Jim Collins, Good to Great, talks about get the right people on the bus and they get them in the right seat.
Right.
So what you're describing is part of that internal management, ensuring, like this receptionist that had other talents, getting her in the right seat.
Right. And she needed a story told to herself
mm-hmm.
about who she was and who and how capable she was.
The potential.
The potential that she had. Someone has to believe in her.
So how does headhunting play into that? There's a lot of people looking for jobs right now, you know, that might be listening that are out there, and there's headhunter agencies that put you with the right company and the right skill set, the right talent management. But maybe there's somebody sitting at the front desk.
Well, what I'm thinking in terms of, just because I wrote Jesus Career Counselor, which is coming out.
Yay!
May the 4th. Yay!
Celebrate. Countdown, baby.
Count it down. The first part of your question, I'm framing someone who is looking for a job, walking in to a company. Imagine you have two candidates, and one person sits down and says, I'd be good at this job because I see you need this and this and this. That's one person. The second person comes in and starts telling the story of that company to them. This is how you're perceived, and I understand that you were started 50 years ago and that you've been through some hard times, and now we're in a recession again, and we need everybody to be on board, and I can tell you that you're going to come out of it because this is your history.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you hire?
Yeah,
second one.
The second
one. The one that cast the vision.
Because they get it.
That's right. They took the time to frame the story, to understand the story, because a corporation is really a legal entity like a person. So they have a story, too. Mm-hmm. They have DNA. They have history. They have cups of sorrow
mm-hmm.
that need to be addressed in corporate healing services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
87% of people admit being wounded, experiencing a wound of the soul in the workplace. So, you know, it's a tender place. And for an Omega leader to look at the staff and say, you know what, you must be very tired. Let's go. I have prepared a place for you. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go sit down and just, how's it going? Mm-hmm. How are you doing? I'm with you. You know, it's going to be hard. Instead of, I want more, yes. You know, the Simon Legree type thing. So that was a long answer to what you were, I don't think was your intended question, but it just framed it for me
mm-hmm.
in terms of someone applying for a job that I think you had in mind, the receptionist who is...
Well, and what I'm saying is that there are capable people a lot of times within an organization that you just named, and they're overlooked.
Yes.
They're underutilized. They're unappreciated. They're, you know, whatever reasons, we're in a rut. We didn't even see you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
How do those that are listening or that will listen eventually to this on-demand series learn to manage from the inside out? How do you learn to do that?
Well, it's leading by example. It's telling the story, figuring out what stories are important to tell, and repeat, and repeat,
mm-hmm.
and repeat, and repeat. And if you've ever watched children watch videos of themselves, they watch them over and over and over again. Or movies, they'll watch them over and over again. I know for myself, when I come across a song that I really love, I mean, Carrie Underwood and I, Jesus Take the Wheel, we have traveled the whole country, and I will play that song over and over and over again. So repetition is built into our framework for learning, but we skip it, thinking that, well, everybody's got it. We need to move on and move on
right.
and move on. And I think we will get tired of our own message long before the public even gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lesson that is important for advertising and marketing, because what happens is the team has put out the campaign and it's a year old and now they want to go on to something else, and the ripple effect is barely
mm-hmm.
starting to hit the shores. So
the innovation. I have an experience that was not a good experience that I saw. In this particular company, they were hiring people from the outside, kind of overlooking the potential internal
mm-hmm.
candidates.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I saw is that they did not have processes for career paths, internal career
yeah.
paths.
Yeah.
So the people that was already working for the company, they were, like, stuck in whatever
mm-hmm.
level
mm-hmm.
they were. And it's not that they didn't have potential or anything, but, and it was very demoralizing to see that there was an open position and they hired somebody from outside.
Yep.
And it's very sad that the people that is inside have to train the ones that are coming from the outside that
mm-hmm.
are going to be their bosses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of contradiction, and I think, you know, organizations make that mistake quite often.
Hmm.
I've seen it a couple of times.
Right, right. More than one.
More than one, yes.
What examples in Scripture, Lori, maybe that Jesus modeled this? Stories that come to your mind where it could be a teachable moment. I'm thinking of, maybe the one in the book, in this chapter, where Jesus looked at the crowd and told Philip, how are we going to feed these people?
Mm-hmm.
And would you speak to that?
Well, it's being a teaching hospital. It is allowing people to crowd around and shadow you or watch you or understand that, you know, you are laying tracks for the next generation
mm-hmm.
with everything that you do. So it takes more time. You know, it's just, and particularly fires and nurses, they'll say, well, I'll just do it myself. You know,
yes,
it's going to take more time to teach this little boy how to build a boat and have him sandpaper the same thing over and over, then why didn't he just turn into his, you know, tune into his iPod and I'll do it myself while he's in the same room? It takes more time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the next generation that adds value. It is the eggs in the nest that are the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to tend those.
So why do you think he enlisted Philip to help solve that hunger problem?
He wanted him to start thinking like a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he warned people, I will not always be here. I'm going to leave you. You need to start doing this. You need to start thinking like a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And posing
Philip,
questions.
Philip is very special with the disciples, right?
Mm-hmm.
His personality and all that. He had to see it, the potential, and then the realization
mm-hmm.
of that potential.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Could be.
Right.
Had to live it, yeah.
So I think part of leadership training is asking questions. And I'm working with one company where they just brought on a new hire, and it was a very high-level meeting, and she was invited to sit in. And the CEO turned to her after listening to all these, you know, kind of high-powered people, and he said, so, you know, what do you think? And she's like, well, you know, her eyes got really big as saucers, and she's the new kid on the block. But he really wanted to get her confidence up.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to take the time to...
Mm-hmm.
build her. He really is amazing at nurturing women leaders, especially. He surrounded himself with them and has done very well because of it. So it is that asking the question and not pretending that you know the answer. Those for fires, I think that's very hard because we don't want to pursue. And it's not about ignorance. It's about taking the time to allow someone else to insert energy into a
mm-hmm.
space. And that's how you grow them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it's a focus issue. I mean, it's taking, like you said with the little boy, it takes a longer time to teach, but you're building for the long term. You're building for the next generation. You're not building for the immediate. It's discipleship.
Right.
It's investing in the person and trusting that it's more effective and has a greater impact on your overall mission by investing internally, because then that internal team is prepared then and equipped and empowered to carry out the job rather than you worry. Then let's take me, for instance. If I'm investing in my teachers and I'm making sure that they understand the culture and the climate of the school, then they are the ones that have the most direct contact with those outside clients,
right.
students, and their families. It's a much more effective means of really addressing the overall mission
right.
than if I feel like I'm responsible for all of the external PR.
Yes.
So if I mentor and train up the leaders that are in front of me, then they're going to do my job for me, and the job is going to be done a lot more effectively and efficiently.
Yes.
I hear you saying.
Yes. I'm thinking of a young man that I took to an art gallery visiting my mother. I kind of watched him grow up, and we wanted some private time, so I took him through some galleries in Sedona, and we played a game that you could have one sculpture and one painting in the gallery, and so we each made our selection, and then I said, now tell me what you like about that one. And then waited for the answer. And to hear this young 12-year-old kid saying, well, I like the quality of the light,
mm-hmm.
or look at what they did with the water, because it was training his eye to be specific
mm-hmm.
with what he saw and what he liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how my mother trained us with art. You know, just not, it's one thing to expose someone to it. It's another thing to elicit their emotion around it. And then we went into a trading post, and he made a beaded necklace. And I asked him, after he picked each of the beads that went on there, some of them were buffalo bones and some other stuff. And I said, what did that feel like to you? Why did you pick that one? And he had to answer that. So I think all teachers know this. But I think as leaders, we often forget that we are teachers.
Yeah. Right.
And mega leaders are teachers first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're... You weren't just going through the motions. His answers were of value, and because of the relationship you had with him, he knew that you really cared what he had to say.
Right.
And that I think that's an important part of it. You weren't going through rote questions just for him to parrot back answers, but you put worth and value on what he had to say, which communicated worth and value to him.
Right.
A source of inspiration and empowerment.
And the prophetic halo effect, too, which... And I'm not saying I always do anything right or everything right. I'm just saying in this particular instance, as a teaching moment of the inside out with him, when I took him into the gallery, I told the gallery owner, I said, this young man, he's present, he's in a student council, and he is a mentor to other students, and he's an amazing artist himself. Mm-hmm. And he just stood up with his head so high.
Mm-hmm.
And as a leader, you can do that too. When you introduce people,
right,
you cast a prophecy around them, which presents them to the other person. It also makes them stand up.
Right.
You know, this is my beloved in whom I am well pleased,
mm-hmm.
instead of just slinging names around and throwing people into rooms. So it's just amazing to see it in action, and I've been really privileged to watch.
And it's very intentional.
Yes,
and
it
I've
is intentional.
You, I've seen you doing that over and over, and, you know, it's a blessing to not only the person you're talking about, but also the person that is receiving the information about the third person,
mm-hmm.
because it speaks of the way you regard people, the way you... you put attention on the details, and as you say, in the casting the vision. Maybe they're just showing a little bit of what they could be in the future,
mm-hmm.
but because you voice it, now it's a little bit more real.
Right.
It's more attainable.
You put it out in the space.
You're sharing parts of that person's story.
Yeah.
And you're helping that person form their story.
So we just have a couple of minutes, Lori. I want to go back to that sprinkler phenomenon. That you spoke about how it's brown around the sprinkler head,
mm-hmm.
that the water does not get very close to the sprinkler. You end this chapter on managing from the inside out in this way. He, meaning the Omega leader, made sure his staff knew what was going on at all times. He kept the grass closest to him green. Could you speak to that as we close this segment this evening?
Mm-hmm. How are you watering those closest to you? Sometimes with your tears, with your prophecies, with your listening, with your quality time. There's a book that says, to a child, love is spelled T-I-M-E.
Yes.
And I think it's true with staff members, too. We often rush past them on our way out the door, and I think I'm guilty of this, too, even though I have virtual staff members. I don't think I listen to them enough as I could. But those are the people who, they are God's gift to you. And this is what he said in John 17. They were your gifts to me,
mm-hmm.
and I ask that they go with me to paradise. So that's the bond. And that's seeing everybody on your team as a treasure to you, one way or the other. And that's the Omega Leadership Style.
Wow. Well, thank you all this evening again for a great segment. Thank you, Lori Beth, for sharing your words of wisdom with us. And we look forward to a future conversation around this table at Studio G on the leadership wisdom of an Omega leader, and we're going to shortly be moving into another segment of this understanding in one of your earlier books around Jesus in Blue Jeans, I believe it is. We'll be picking that series up here pretty soon. So looking forward to this continued conversation. We hope you all have a great evening, and we will be back next week. Good night.
Good night.